I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Pretty Pennington was 25 when she was killed after a night of dancing and celebration over an argument she had with another woman on the previous day. The weapon used? A semi-automatic AK-47. It's the latest story in KCUR's series about gun violence in Kansas City. We'll talk about the argument today. Then, kids misbehave sometimes, it's just a fact. But when they act out at school, is sending them home the best solution? We'll talk to Mayor Sly James and KCPS Superintendent Mark Bedell about an upcoming suspension summit and a different way to think about disparities in school discipline. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. All it took was an argument to lead to the death of Pretty Pennington last November. Pennington was just 25 when she was shot to death a day after that argument following a night of dancing and celebration. Peggy Lowe is a reporter for KCUR who has been examining the city's soaring homicide count and this notion that arguments often lead to murder. The ongoing series that she and reporter Andrea Tudhope are working on is called The Argument. Peggy Lowe, welcome back.
Good morning, Steve.
Give us a little background about your series here, which again is called The Argument.
Right. So we decided to go back and look at the high homicide numbers from 2016. And in looking at them, I was studying a Kansas City Police Department memo. It's called the Blue Sheet. Every day it's the crime tally totals. And the number one motive for murder is an argument. And at first, I kind of laughed at that, like, well, duh, of course.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be some sort of conflict. But then we thought, well, that's actually very interesting because that boiled down all these very complex reasons for murders in Kansas City and elsewhere. They boiled down to ultimately an argument, and then typically someone picks up a gun. So that's what we've looked at. So we are on number three, I think, of our series. We've looked at mental health issues, family issues, that kind of thing. And just recently, I have looked at accessibility to guns and firearms.
And you talk about that in this latest piece. We'll get to that, right?
We sure do.
You know, when did it become the norm? And maybe this is an impossible question to answer in this town or anywhere, Peggy, to settle an argument with murder.
I don't know when it became a norm, because here's what's interesting. The national homicide trends have been going down. You know, they rose very dramatically in the 90s when there was a so-called crack epidemic, you know, and a lot of the neighborhoods were really going bad. And since then, there were a lot of crime prevention efforts that worked. And so the national rate went down. Now we're seeing about 10 sort of medium-sized cities, including Kansas City in this country, that are driving the rate, it's ticking back up. Kansas City, I think, is number 9 on the FBI's list of cities with high homicides.
And you wonder every year as we watch these numbers why Kansas City is so high. We've talked to police officers, we've talked to the chief, we've talked to everybody, and no one really has a clear answer for that, do they?
They really don't. You know, like, for instance, I've heard Mayor Sly James on your show many times. And
he'll be here later on today. Yeah.
Oh, good. And he has called it, and we quoted it in our first story, he calls it slow motion mass murder that no one is really paying attention to. You know, the Kansas City Health Department views it as a public health epidemic and is trying to work on it in that regard, like say something like drunk driving or tuberculosis or something. So, there's multitude reasons behind it. And so we're looking at all that. Of course, racism is one of them, too. You know, our city was redlined many years ago. And so a lot of the high crime areas are behind those red lines. So we're looking at all those reasons.
Your latest story, the third in the series in this ongoing work you're doing called The Argument, focuses on a woman named Pretty Pennington. Who was she?
This story just kind of caught my eye and my heart. First of all, I love her name, Pretty Pennington. And it's a nickname because her name is actually Mariana. And
she was called Pretty because a lot of people thought she was pretty.
She's absolutely gorgeous. I've seen a ton of videos and photos. I've gotten to know her family, and she's really, really a beautiful woman. So she was 25 years old. It was November 12th, 2016. She was at a wedding of two of her friends. It was actually a gay wedding, and she was there with all of her family, and they were dancing all night. And her mom tells a story. Her mom's name is Marvella Clark, and her mom told me the story that there was her cell phone was on the table where their family was sitting, and basically the only time Pretty picked it up was to take photos and selfies and put them on Facebook and Snapchat and all that stuff. Otherwise, she just danced all night. She just had a ball, and I've seen the videos, and she really did have a good time.
Yeah, and so that was all going well, but something had happened the day before that led to the incidents that occurred later that night.
That's right.
The next day, yeah.
That's right. Basically, like, for instance, the lead of my story said that Pretty Pennington was killed by a girl fight, a handgun, and an AK-47. So she had had a fight the day before with a young woman roughly her age who they were spatting about a memorial service for Pretty's former boyfriend. He has since passed away, also a victim of gun violence. And they were fighting about it because this family apparently didn't like who Pretty's dating now, and they didn't want her to come to the memorial service. So Pretty and this woman got into this fisticuffs, actually inside a moving car. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's a police report on it. And they ultimately hit two parked cars. And essentially, Marvella Clark, Pretty's mom, told me that the other woman got whooped by Pretty. And so she was mad, and she was out for revenge, allegedly. And so she had been stalking her and calling her cell phone and watching where Pretty was on Facebook and Snapchat. And that night, apparently, Marvella Clark, Pretty's mom, believes they found Pretty and her friends and her sister leaving the wedding. And then their car broke down at 21st in Cleveland. This woman came up. She was following in this car.
This is the same night as the wedding?
Same night as the wedding, just like an hour afterwards. Mm-hmm. The woman came up to the driver's side of the car and said, "That's Pretty right there." The woman's boyfriend, allegedly, came up on the other side, started shooting. He pulled out Pretty's
sister,
Marciana, and started shooting her, also shot Pretty. He emptied the handgun that he had. Then he went back to the car, got an AK-47, came back, and kept shooting. So he was shooting the young women in the back, Marciana and Pretty. Pretty died. Marciana, to this day, is now paralyzed from the neck down, and the other young women have spent a lot of time in the hospital on their wounds.
It just stops you. Hearing you describe this, it just stops you.
Who has an AK-47 on the streets, right? You know, when I talked to local law enforcement, they were like, this is a weapon of war. And this man, allegedly, his name is DeAndre Day-Day Jackson.
He's been charged with the murders here.
He's been charged with the murders, with the murder and the assault. And he allegedly took out an AK-47 and shot up this car. I asked Pretty's mom about it, and I said, how does this happen? And she looked at me like, she's like, hey, it's really easy to get these guns. And we have this quote that was in my story, and she said, you know, you can get them at a gun show, you can get them on the street. It's very easy.
Even an AK-47.
An AK-47. And it's becoming easier, according to prosecutors. And this is a story I'll do later on. But because now, since January 1st, when Missouri undid the concealed carry law, you know, they can't pick up kids who are walking around with these kinds of guns because you don't need a concealed carry license any longer. So it's pretty crazy.
You know, there were a lot of murders you could have picked for your series. And I'm wondering, what was it about this one that stood out to you, Peggy?
This one was the firearms. It was the weaponry involved. Exactly what you and I are talking about.
So much firepower for people sitting helplessly in cars. Yeah.
That's right. And so more than a year ago, Kyle Palmer, our morning anchor, came to me, and he had seen a story in the New York Times that most of the guns used in Chicago, which also has one of the highest homicide rates in the country, most of those guns come from Indiana, from gun shows, and people go over to that that state and bring them back. Most of the guns here are homegrown. We have more, and this is just licensed. This is legal firearms. We have 525 dealerships in the 9-county metro area.
In fact, you point out that's those number of dealerships outnumbers the number of quick trips in this metro area 6-1.
It's easier to get a gun than a soda. Yes. It's amazing. So that's what we
found. Astonishing.
Yeah. And even the ATF says, you know, our guns here are homegrown, home sourced, if you will. That's the quote. And in the 25 field divisions of the ATF, the Kansas City Field Division, which covers Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri, and Kansas, we have the most dealerships in the country in this 4-state region.
And there's a reason for that, at least based on people you talk to in the story, this notion that this is the culture of our area is conducive to owning guns. The hunting lifestyle here also contributes to it. But again, there are 6 times the number of dealerships for guns in the metro than there are quick trips.
And that's legal. That's not even counting illegal guns, which are impossible to count. So the weaponry and the firearms, just even in our metropolitan area, are really, really high. And that's something else the mayor has often talked about. You know, when people, to settle an argument, pick up a gun that's very easy to find, how do you fight that? Mm-hmm. How do you combat that? How do you change
when
that?
When they're so readily available.
They're so readily available.
Now, folks who are favor gun rights question whether the availability of guns has anything to do with the number of homicides here. You came across one expert, Peggy, a man named Daniel Webster, director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Policy and Research, who told you that in rural areas, there's no correlation between the large number of gun dealerships and homicides. But research shows that that's not true for cities. So maybe that begins to explain why rural and urban lawmakers in Jeff City struggle on this issue, because there are two realities in Missouri, in a sense.
That's absolutely right. I've also heard the mayor and other lawmakers talk here in Missouri about, you know, someone had suggested like a gun court or something like that. And, you know, Sly James has even said, what good would that do when the state laws allow for virtually anything? How do you combat gun violence? The same researcher that you mentioned, Daniel Webster, also did a look at the laws in Missouri that were basically loosened in 2007 in Jefferson City. And since that time, the homicide rate has gone up here 20%. St. Louis is another city that has a really, really bad problem. So the accessibility of firearms, the loose gun laws, in part, lead to the murder rate. That said, there's lots of other reasons, too. So
this man who's been charged with these crimes, DeAndre Day-Day Jackson, do you know much about him?
We don't know that much about him, with this exception. So Pretty Pennington's former boyfriend, who she was arguing about the memorial service that I mentioned, that is Day-Day's twin brother. So this was sort of an intra-family murder as well. So essentially, Day-Day Jackson allegedly murdered the mother of his niece. So that's another part that we're going to be looking into, is this idea of retribution and family squabbles and domestic abuse and that kind of thing, too. So that's what we understand about him. Now, here's the weird part. The charging documents are interesting. And, of course, prosecutors out of Jackson County won't talk about it because this is going to trial October 2nd. And Mr. Jackson's attorney didn't call me back either. So, but he was charged with several weapons violations and assault. He has been charged with murder in the second degree for Pretty's murder, which seems weird. And the
as opposed to the first degree.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the girlfriend, Jackson's girlfriend, has not been charged at all. She remains free. And again, prosecutors won't comment on that. But that was a big question I had on this case.
Although they said they're still investigating.
They're still investigating. A murder, you know, investigation is always open. So perhaps they're working on something. I don't know.
What's next coming up in your ongoing series, The Argument?
We're looking at mental illness, That, of course, is a huge problem. I think we're going to look at that case out of Brookside where a young man who was mentally ill hurt some family members. We're going to be looking at family. We're going to be looking at domestic abuse, which is not one of the motives tracked by police, which is interesting. So we're just going to keep going. You know, we're looking at year 2016 when more than 200 murders happened. 2017 is queuing up to be just as bad.
Or even worse, and maybe set an all-time record in Kansas City for the most homicides ever, right?
That's right, Steve. So all the reporters in this town are covering that.
That's KCUR's Peggy Lowe talking about her ongoing series, The Argument, which you can see at kcur.org. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
And speaking of the mayor, he will be here in our second half today, Mayor Sly James, and he'll be joined by Dr. Mark Bedell, the superintendent of Kansas City's public school district, to talk about school suspensions. There's too many of them and what's being done about it. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Last week, we had financial advice for non-traditional couples, advice on how to get babies to sleep, and advice on what films to see and to avoid. You can find those conversations online at kcur.org and on the NPR One app. Tomorrow, we hear one woman's story of being a juror in a death penalty case that's now the subject of a documentary. Also, we learn the grim history of lynching in America. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, the idea of suspending K through 12 students for poor behavior and sending them home from school goes back decades in this country. But in the Kansas City area, some educators think the suspension rate is out of control. In fact, they point to stats from just a few years ago that showed that Missouri, ranking number one for the highest suspension of black elementary school students, and the gap between suspension rates of black and white elementary students also was the nation's highest. Repeated suspensions can lead to a derailing of a young person's education, and that can lead to even further suspensions. The good news is that administrators in the Kansas City, Missouri School District have recognized the issue and have cut the number of suspensions dramatically. On Wednesday, Mayor Sly James is convening a school suspension summit to further address the issue. With us today to talk about this is Mayor James himself. Mayor, always good to have you. Welcome back.
Thank you, Steve. Always good to be here.
Dr. Mark Bedell is the superintendent of the Kansas City School District. Mr. Superintendent, welcome back to you.
Thank you, Steve.
Ellie Moxley is an education reporter at KCUR who has covered this issue. Ellie, good to have you as always, too.
Hey, Steve.
Mayor, before we launch into suspensions, we just had a conversation about an ongoing series here at KCUR about gun violence, a topic that has been you've been speaking out about for years now. I'm wondering, as the homicide count creeps up in Kansas City this year, how frustrated you are, how concerned you are about what you're seeing and the lack of action in Jeff City that you've talked often about.
Unbelievably frustrated, because it's really somewhat predictable that some of the laws passed would lead to higher incidents of gun violence. When you couple that with the tension in this country, the distrust of communities with police, the political divisions, the supremacists versus the Antifas and all of that stuff, and you give everybody a gun when they're angry, upset, drunk, mad because their girlfriend was disrespected on Twitter or Facebook, then we're going to have higher crime. The problem is that nobody has figured out how to solve this problem, but there's one very easy way to do it, and that is to have realistic adult conversations about keeping guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have it.
You've tried to have those conversations in Jeff City, and you haven't gotten very far, at least based on what you've said on this show in the past.
And we're not going to get very far as long as all of this is being controlled by political ideology rather than basic common sense and facts and data. This is all political to a large extent. It's all a big push for Second Amendment rights, which are fine, but there needs to be some understanding that unless people agree that anybody, anytime, at any age should be able to have a gun, then there should be restrictions. And if there are going to be restrictions, how should those restrictions be determined and applied? We haven't even gotten to that decision. In fact, when there is a major problem with gun violence in this country, the first reaction of most legislatures is to loosen gun laws, not restrict them.
Okay, we'll continue that conversation as you continue to visit this program, Mayor. And the fact that you and the health department are convening a summit on this issue of school suspensions, now we're switching to our main topic, suggests that you are deeply concerned about school suspensions and how they're doled out. What are you seeing out there? What are your concerns?
Well, first of all, let me thank Superintendent Bedell for his fine work in the area. But I also want to make sure that people understand the fine work done by my education advisor, Dr. Julie Holland. My concern is very simple. We work very hard on third grade reading proficiency because we understand the connection between third grade reading proficiency and further academic success.
That's led to your group, Turn the Page.
Turn the Page is right there in the forefront of it. Done a marvelous job with our board and the actions that we've taken in improving those rates. However, kids can't learn to read, and kids can't learn if they're not in school. So we've tackled the issue of mobility a couple of years ago. We tackled the issue of absenteeism beyond that. Now we're tackling the issue of forced suspensions because that creates absenteeism. Not only that, but it also, I would think, creates more tension in the classroom between student and teacher.
Superintendent Bedell, how big a concern is this to you as you navigate your early years here as superintendent and the big school suspension summit coming up tomorrow?
It's a big deal, Steve. I want to start off by commending the mayor and his educational advisor, Julie Holland, for putting this together. I mean, I think many people in the community are aware that we serve roughly 90% of our district are children of color, with about 58% of those being black. And so we know when you look at data nationally that this is a major problem. This has been a major problem ever since I can remember back to 2007 when I was a high school principal, and the percentages of children of color that were either being put out of school or being referred into special education services kind of further supports the fact that if they aren't in school, then that becomes an additional impediment to these kids being able to be placed on a more rigorous academic track. And so this is something that's very critical and very important to us in the Kansas City Public School District. And I can tell you, based on the recent article, we've significantly dropped the number of kids that are being suspended and keeping them in school more. But it's critical that we then begin to focus on the root causes as to why kids show up the way that they do, and then making sure that we're properly preparing our educators to be able to see the warning signs so that we can intervene differently than just saying this kid is acting out, send them to the assistant principal's office, and then the kid's being suspended.
So the good news here is that your district has recognized there's a problem with too many suspensions. You're acting on reducing the number of suspensions, and I'm told, and I've read, you want to reduce them still further.
Absolutely. That's always been our plan, and I could tell you, if you were to look at my track record of when I worked as an assistant superintendent, suspension rates with the high schools that I supervise declined every single year. And overall, that had a positive impact on the aggregate data for the entire school system because we wanted to take a different approach to how we support our students. And part of that is because I worked at an alternative school in Houston for 3 years, three straight years, where we didn't suspend at all. And it was a very interesting experience for me, but it forced us to have to take a whole different approach to how we intervene and supported kids when they would blow up or when they would do things that we felt were not within the policy of the school and the school district.
Elliot Moxley, you've covered this issue for KCUR, and the point is here, the superintendent just said it, sometimes kids do blow up in classrooms, kids who come from backgrounds where they've been exposed to violence and things that a lot of white kids who live elsewhere in this community don't often see.
Right. And we started looking into this issue a couple of years ago. Our colleagues over at St. Louis Public Radio had gotten the numbers from the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education and, you know, really crunched the numbers behind this really high rate of suspensions for young black students. And I went in at the end of not this past school year, but the year before, and sat down with a bunch of the folks at the district to talk about kind of like, hey, your guys' numbers don't look great. And they're like, we know. And that's why this year, which was that would have been the 2015-16 school year, they're like, you're going to see better numbers this year and you're going to see better numbers next year because we're changing our approach. So part of what that means is we talk about this idea of trauma-informed care. We talk about, you know, taking a different tack with discipline. Instead of automatically suspending kids, you know, because they talk back to a teacher, you try to target the root cause of that behavior. You try to make sure that you're talking to kids in a way, you're working with them, you're helping them de-escalate when they get upset in class. Yes, you still have to suspend kids when really serious things happen, like they bring a weapon to school, they start a physical altercation with another student. But there's a lot of these other behaviors that I think the thinking now in education is that there's other ways to correct them.
Some teachers, you point out in one of your stories, have something called calm down kits. What are calm down kits?
All right. We've all seen, like, we'll get a stress ball or something. We're at a conference and, you know, you squeeze it and you kind of use it to, like, relax your tension. Calm down kits work in the same way. You know, it's something that is soothing that gets kids to focus their attention in a different way. Maybe it's a bottle of water that's filled with kind of this glittery, shimmery substance. They shake it up and, you know, It sounds funny, but like think about
things that... Does that help radio talk show hosts too and mayors of major cities?
Potentially. Yeah. So I mean, I think that that's one of those things. It's just that little something that kind of, you know, manipulative that you can put in your hand. Maybe they take out a coloring sheet page and just focus on coloring it for a little bit, but just enough for the kid to kind of get the distance away from whatever the incident was in the classroom so that then they can kind of come back and talk about it in a way that's more rational, in a way that's more appropriate, that they can talk about. You know, sometimes there's still going to be consequences to those actions, but you know, if you just deliver the consequences right after a kid's spoken out or yelled or screamed or kicked a chair, that kid is still very wound up. And the whole idea is you have to get them to calm down before you can have that discussion.
You know, Mayor, what do you say to people who might be listening to this who say you're getting this all too complicated? You misbehave in class, you get punished for it, and if that means getting suspended, out you go. That's how kids learn. That's how they learn to control their behavior. And you're taking a softball approach here.
Well, I think that they would be ignoring one very basic fact that has become all too apparent recently, and that is that there is still racial bias in this country. And teachers react to different kids to some extent based on race. I don't want to make this all about black kids and trauma, because it's not all about black kids and trauma. Sometimes it's about any kid, and it's always about teachers and how they interact with those kids. So we shouldn't just skip over the part that that seems to make it people think that this only happens in inner city schools. It happens wherever black and brown kids are, and it happens in preschool. And, you know, and it's real hard to understand that sometimes, but I'm not all that concerned with people who aren't in the system, who don't know what's going on, wanting to take a harsher approach. My guess is that a lot of those people might feel differently if it was their kid involved. But the bottom line is that lots of things have evolved in this country. And one of the things that needs to evolve further is an understanding of the impact of race and the impact of trauma on kids generally, and how that is handled in school as it specifically relates to kids of color. And that's a whole different ballgame. So we know one thing. You can't punish people into everything. We've tried that. It doesn't work. That's why we have prisons that are overpopulated, because we punish instead of try to make things better. We need to engage in trauma-informed care. We need to have real, true, open, honest discussions about the impact of race inside a classroom and how teachers who may not even recognize a bias, may not even believe they have one, may actually see that bias coming out. We all have them.
Yeah.
And if we are honest with ourselves, there are times when we all act on them. And we need to make sure that we're not doing that as much as possible in schools.
Superintendent, I want to get you to react here to what the mayor just said, but I also want to invite our listeners to join our conversation here as we talk about school suspensions. There's too many of them. What's being done to rectify that? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. We want to know what you think about this. 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Superintendent Bedell, when the mayor was talking about the fact that we can't punish people, you know, that isn't always the answer. You nodded your head vigorously there. How come?
It's simple. As a former student who showed up to school with a lot of mental stress, a lot of social stress, I'm speaking about myself,
mm-hmm.
and teachers not really understanding why I'm showing up the way that I showed up. And the easiest thing to do is to put the kid out and ultimately putting the kid back on the streets, an area that's not necessarily where we want kids to be. It's not a healthy situation. And so that was one of the things that vowed me to go into education, was because of an experience that happened with me in the second grade with a teacher that just basically wrote me off because I was in class acting up one day, and it didn't have anything to do with my academic ability. It had more to do with the fact that I'm experiencing things that I don't think a second grader should be experiencing, and I'm crying out for help, and I don't know how to cry out for help. So when the mayor talks about this implicit racist bias that exists, it does. And I remember going through equity training and learning more about that, is that we see things a certain way. And if we're not trained, then the way that we expect things to go and how people should behave and how people should show up that's the framework that we operate from within, that often causes us then to approach some of these scenarios with a deficit lens. What I will share with you and all of the listeners is that we've taken a different approach in our district. We have now our student and community support department has already rolled out a 3-year trauma and mental health plan that was presented to the Board of Education. It's a very fine plan to really help us in that area, and it aligns with our strategic plan that was recently approved. Goal number two, we have conducted training with Pure Edge Incorporated, which is a national nonprofit organization that has trained us as executive leaders on meditation and yoga strategies. And we're now moving that into our schools to kind of help our kids to relax and ease anxiety so that they can learn at a high level. We have conducted restorative justice training. The entire executive team went through a 2-day training because we want to become a restorative justice school district where we can look at conflict resolution in a different way. But it has to start with us up at the top. And then, of course, what we're trying to do right now with our mentoring initiative, this model of wanting to really connect our kids with positive adult advocates that can help address some of the social and emotional.
So a multifaceted approach is
that's
what you're
correct.
Talking about,
yes, sir.
Here. Let's go to some phone calls here. A lot of them are lining up. Let's go to Michael from Shawnee. Michael, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about school suspensions. Good morning.
Good morning. I've actually worked in behavior disorder classrooms, schools, worked with students who are in alternative placements. What I do is I do therapy for them. And I found that the thing that works more than anything else is the kids want to feel empowered. They want to feel like they're being listened to. And I found that the biggest success has come from just sitting down with them and having conversations about their life, about not necessarily about what's going on at school, but what's going on in their lives, and get to know them so they feel like you're advocating for them. If they don't feel like they've got somebody that's listening to them, then it's like, why should I make an effort? Because, you know, there's nobody out there that's really cares about what's going on with me. And I found that that's where I find the biggest changes, is when a student feels like they're being listened to. And I talk to teachers all the time that if you spend, let's say, you know, 2 minutes every morning just getting to know a little bit about a student who might be having some difficulty, that student can become an advocate for you. And, you know, you do that for 3 weeks, and all of a sudden now you've got a student who might be a problem with behaviors in the classroom, suddenly becomes that person who, well, my teacher is listening to me, and that teacher can then depend on that student to maybe help in other ways in the classroom.
So, Michael, this new approach that Dr. Bedell is laying out for us today and that Ellie Moxley has reported on, this makes sense to you?
I think at any time that you can engage students not just talk to them, but listen to what they're saying. As a therapist, that's, I mean, that's where what my practice is you listen to what
right.
someone is saying. And students, for a long time, they've been talked to as opposed to listened to. And I think that when you got a student who goes home and hears gunshots and, you know, they're,
right.
they're worried about what's going to happen at night, who's coming in my house, and then you expect them to get up at, you know, 6 o'clock next morning, going to class.
And perform.
And perform, it's impossible. You know, you've got to understand that, you know, there's students, you got to almost de-escalate what's going on the night before.
And Michael, I got a full board of calls. I got to move on, but I really appreciate your phone call today.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Dan from Lee Summit. Dan, you're on Up to Date.
Yeah, hi, Steve. I do agree with the mayor, probably at first for me with him. But I think that I'm a substitute teacher in the Kansas City School District, and these kids come to school hungry. They come to school with sometimes with obviously serious issues. It may have to do with mental health in some cases. But the previous caller, you know, where you have to listen to the child or listen to the student and then let him know that you care, you know, that goes so far. But this is going to be as easy as just setting up a detention with people, you know, teachers listening to them. They have to think that you're going to really try to help them, and really trying to help somebody with maybe mental issues or somebody who doesn't have enough to eat is going to take the cooperation of more than just the Kansas City School District.
Right.
I mean, the state, it's going to have to have multiple entities, you know, involved in this, because these kids really need help, and they're not any different than any other kids. And I'm a sub for Kelly Services, and I've taught in a lot of different school districts, but there's no difference. And those kids want to learn. And every once in a while you get a disruptive kid where the other kids can't learn. And you want to say, you know, out, I've listened to you. You're not, you know, you just had too much sugar. You haven't had enough to eat.
Right.
So you send them to detention and they handle him there. But suspending kids, you know, unless it's like gun violence or fist fighting or something like that, that's nuts.
Okay.
You just can't suspend them.
Dan, thanks very much. And, you know, Ellie Boxley, again, from KCUR, when a kid is suspended then under this new program, what happens to him or her? What's the protocol here? Because they don't leave school, they go somewhere else.
Right, and this is something that Dr. Bedell can speak to as well. But really, where we're seeing the numbers starting to shift in Kansas City public schools is we're moving towards more in-school suspension. So we're at least still providing kids, you know, a safe place to go. They're getting their coursework. In some cases, they go to an in-district suspension. You know, they go to one of the alternative schools kind of for a couple of days, a couple of weeks. They're in a classroom over there to kind of give them a chance to kind of get back on track.
What can you add to that, Dr. Bedell?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I shared with our principals is, why punish a kid? Let's use a high school kid, for example. And this student is taking 7 classes and they had a problem in one of those 7 classes. It doesn't make sense to me to suspend a kid for an entire day. And now you not only punish the kid because they don't get their instruction in those other 6 classes, but you punish those teachers that are responsible for educating that kid because they had a problem in one particular class. So the in-school suspension model can work where if it's a situation where they have to be in there all day, then we have certified employees that can support those kids. I believe in you. If the kid had a problem in one class, you maybe suspend that kid for that one period, allow that kid to go to the rest of his or her classes, so you're not punishing mm-hmm. the kid and also punishing those teachers. And so it's a different approach. It's a different approach than what we've used in the past. And so we believe that it gives us an opportunity then to work with that kid to help determine what was that issue in that particular classroom, because sometimes it's a personality clash.
Right.
And you don't want to punish a kid because of a personality clashing for the whole day.
Now, Mr. Mayor, again, some people might wonder, your work with city government, you have no direct supervisory control over the schools, and yet you're sponsoring this school suspension summit. Why?
because there is nothing in this city that is not affected by the education of its children and its citizens, period, end of story.
Mm-hmm.
Our workforce is affected by education. The money that we spend on health is affected by education. The longevity of people's lives is affected by education. Crime is affected by education. Kids that get into trouble or don't get into trouble is affected by education. There is no aspect of what I do as a mayor that doesn't have some touchstone in education at some point in time in the past in a person's life.
Now, we're talking today, the superintendent of the Kansas City Public Schools is with us, but as you've pointed out any number of times, there are a number of school districts that are encroach in the boundaries of Kansas City, Missouri. Are other districts doing the same thing, taking the same approach to school suspension?
I don't know if they're taking the same approach as KCPS, but I can tell you that the national data about school suspensions is alarming from city to city and state to state.
Mm-hmm.
It's not significantly different here versus other places in the country. And again, when you look at the things that are impacting school suspensions, trauma, there's trauma everywhere. And I think people are mistaken if they want to think that only trauma only occurs in African American and Latino neighborhoods. Gun violence is everywhere. It's happening more and more in Johnson County. It's happening all over the place because there's more idiots with guns. That's going to happen. So kids are affected by that. Bias exists. If there's any doubt about it, then look at the proliferation of supremacist groups. Look at what happened in Charlottesville. Look at all the clashes and tension between people of different races and social economic status. Now, all of these things affect kids. A kid can't live in a house mm-hmm. or live in a neighborhood when all this stuff is going on around them without being affected by it. It's like grapes that make wine. They plant grapes in a field of lilacs. The grape's going to come out with a touch of lilac in it. If you plant kids in a field of nonsense, then that kid's going to come out with a touch of nonsense in them.
Dr. Bedell, are other school districts adopting approaches similar to what the Kansas City district is doing?
It's a good question, and I will probably have to have that conversation with my peers. I believe I can tell you nationally, the two districts that I've worked in, this was an area of focus. So one would assume that all of our districts are taking a strong look at how we suspend. And I just want to make this comment. The caller a few minutes ago, that's a substitute teacher, I want to thank you for what you do. But he made a point that I thought was very critical, which he said the school district can't do this alone. There's a component in our strategic plan that talks about schools can't do it alone. And I often tell people, the school district didn't get like this on its own, right? This is a community effort that needs to take place in order for us to begin to realize the dreams that we want to have and that these kids want. We have to come together and do it. And so there is a component in our strategic plan that specifically speaks to that and speaks to how the community can get involved in helping us to get this school district to prominence.
John from Kansas City, Missouri, you're on Up to Date. Our topic, school suspensions. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Go ahead.
I was calling concerning, I have a nephew, and he's been put in, he goes in the Raytown school district, and it seems like I talked to his mother and his grandfather all the time, and they're saying, hey, this kid is being put in timeout every day. He's been suspended 3 or 4 times, and he's only 11 years old. Hmm. And my problem with the whole situation is this kid is actually a bright kid, but when they put him in timeout, when they suspend him, it reinforces something with him. Hey, maybe I'm not the student I should be. Or instead of like, okay, I'm in timeout. Why am I in timeout? I can perform with these other students, but nobody's giving me a chance. Yeah, he's had some, you know, situations where he's been, rebellious and things like that. But in reality, when I look at the kid, when I talk to him, we have the greatest conversations, and I just can't understand it.
John, I appreciate the phone call. Superintendent, I bet you've heard this story a lot.
I have, and it's a situation where we have to begin to look at every student individually. I often tell people too that nobody wants to be a failure. Right? No kid, none of us in here as adults want to fail in anything. And when we don't experience success in the things that we should be experiencing success in, we find other things to get into. It may very well mean that this kid is just bored, right? Because we're not challenging him academically. And that happens across a lot of our school systems. This is not just a Raytown issue. I think this is something that happens across school systems across the country. Are we properly educating kids and meeting them where they are, making sure that they're being challenged, and then, you know, creating a way for them to learn that's not traditional, because maybe he's not a traditional learner?
We're going to have to leave our conversation there. Mayor Sly James' school suspension summit takes place tomorrow from 8 to 3 at the Central Library. Good luck with that event, Mayor.
Thank you. And I do want to make sure that we recognize the great work of the Hall Family Foundation, Combat, and the Library, and all the school leaders that are coming. This is the time for us to have this conversation. This is where community comes together.
Superintendent Bedell, always good to have you here. KCUR's Ellie Moxley, thank you very much.
Thanks,
as well.
Steve.
Tomorrow on the show, how a death penalty case changed one juror's life and a look at the grim history of lynching in America. You can follow us at KCUR up to date, and you can follow me at Steve Kraske. Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Coy Duggar produced this show. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.